This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Welcome, welcome, friends. Welcome, friends. Oh, here we are. Another episode of the Rational Revolution where, well, I think these conversations just took on a little bit more meaning here over the last week. I hope you are okay. I hope you're doing well. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the fallout in my musings, part of it. Because there's a message I really want to get out, and so I hope you stick around for that, because that's something that that means a lot to me. But here to kind of break things down is my dear friend and yours, Mr. Carlton Huffman. What's up, buddy?
Well, coming to you from the great state of North Carolina, the one silver lining I can sit here and say from this, we had a choice between our first Jewish governor and Mark Robinson, a self-described black Nazi, and the good guys won down the ballot on this
one.
So we can at least say, as far as North Carolina, despite our top-of-the-ticket performance, that there are some silver linings in what was otherwise a very rough Tuesday.
No black Nazi for North Carolina. That's good. That was good.
Yeah, and it seems like Democrats were able to break the Republican supermajority in one of the chambers here in North Carolina. But, about the 8 o'clock on Tuesday evening, as the numbers started to really roll in, that's when I knew that a lot of the assumptions that we've made about the course of the election and in some ways about just the thinking of the country were off base, and now we've got 4 years ahead of us, but also some generational implications that we're just going to have to deal with now.
Yeah, you know, and in reference to the candidate for governor, that is what he described himself as on more than one occasion. So it's not us saying that. That was self-glossed by that candidate.
I would sit here and say, this being a family show, if you were to Google Mark Robinson in the CNN article, I would just say, be sure your kids are not around for that
one. It's wild.
What they unearthed was not just wild, but of a just the fact that that man was a heartbeat away from the governor's mansion already was a testament to what happens when you don't bet your candidates well enough.
So, yeah, on election night, I was invited to speak at a rally that was put on to kind of just talk about accepting the results and making sure every vote counts and all that. And so that started at like 8:06. We got home about 8:45, and seeing these returns come in, and that was kind of my first indication where it's like, oh my gosh, this is not good. And then the biggest thing for me was when we saw that the poll from Iowa was wrong. That was the biggest. It's like, okay, this is not good.
Yeah, and I mean, when we saw it too, looking at the early numbers coming in from Florida, where it had been semi-competitive last time 4 years ago, and it was not competitive at all. And Trump ran up the biggest score of any Republican running in the state of Florida since George H.W. Bush in 1988. And the fact that New Jersey was closer than Florida, if you had ever told me that in my political lifetime, I would not have believed it. But that is where we are and just where we saw just the country as a whole. 16 million less people voted in this election than in the 2020 election. And Donald Trump, he got 2 million less votes than he did 4 years ago, but the biggest drop-offs and shifts were in the Biden coalition that had been put together in 2020, and unfortunately, Kamala Harris just was not able to do it, even with a lot of structural advantages in terms of money, in terms of net favorability, but the Trump campaign, to their credit, I mean, they were I think we had said it on previous episodes, the people on that campaign were focused political killers, unlike his previous campaigns.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I think there was someone on online that I kind of got into it a little bit with, and she was saying that, like, that Kamala Harris, her coalition was bad because they kowtowed to Dick Cheney, you know, and this person's very, you know, she's a very, very much on the left side. And I was like, that's not at all. That's not where the lack of support came from. This support was there in 2020, and that support was still there now. That support was there in during his first election, with all the Never Trumpers. So it's like that part of the coalition is not something that moved. It was more of the far left that just dropped off.
And you can definitely say in the state of Michigan that
yes.
played a big impact, especially among some of the predominantly Muslim communities in the Detroit area. But also, too, it was something that, I mean, we saw it in 2016 and in 2020. Trump just ran up the score. I mean, if you get outside of a lot of the major metropolitan areas, Trump just ramped up the score. I mean, every time he's been on the ballot, it has only gotten stronger out in rural America. But one of the things that we also saw, too, and we even saw it in Milwaukee, we saw it in Philadelphia, is that black men and Hispanic men trended more towards Trump. And a lot of it, we can get into the nuts and bolts of it on some of the cultural issues that were weaponized by the Trump campaign and in some ways hypocritical fashion. But those cultural issues were weaponized to great effect, basically put together one of the more racially diverse Republican winning coalitions that they've ever had.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's kind of wild to me that, you know, that Muslims in Michigan sat this one out in mass. Like, it's not a little. And do you realize what you're doing is you're going to help allow the Muslim ban president to get back in office to do that same stuff again, you know? And I think it's very frustrating where, you know, on the right, we've talked about these litmus tests that they've had about, you know, oh, what do you think about Trump? You know, and that was like the measuring stick of where you are. But now here on the left, it's like, what the hell are you doing? Like, do you understand? If we have 100,000 people who are of Muslim faith in Detroit, and they're like, we're going to sit this one out. You're going to sit out the election of the guy that, like, one of his first acts in office was the Muslim ban. You're going to sit this one out, really?
Yeah, and you got to remember, too, that Donald Trump on multiple occasions throughout the course of this campaign used the word Palestinian as a slur upon people.
Right.
And so it's just something that it's staring you right in the face. But I think our mutual friend from the Bulwark, Tim Miller, summed it up in the most succinct way that I can find possible. It's that a very good thing happened to the worst people in this country. And I don't say that as a sweeping indictment of all Trump supporters. I know the economy, even though by looking at us in relation to the rest of the world, we have the best economy, and there is like no close contender. But the hangover from COVID definitely persisted, and when you have a incumbent president, Joe Biden, with a approval rating that has not been in positive territory since August of his first year in office, it was the fact that Kamala Harris even kept it close in some ways was, I mean, a great testament to her personally. But
yes,
so much of the country was, whether it is an affirmative statement on Trumpism and the man himself, or a protest vote against the Democrat Party, Joe Biden in particular, but also some of the cultural directions that the Democrat Party took in the last 10 years, the end result is the same, that Donald Trump won the presidency with a majority of the popular vote for the second time that Republicans have won the popular vote since 1988.
Yeah. I mean, she had an impossible task. You know, she really did. It was the campaign was about 100 and some odd days. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that and she had, Joe Biden did not do a good job on the border. And that was, I think that was one of the key issues that just crushed her. You know, and it's so funny. You know, people talk about how, oh, well, you know, she's the border czar and all this other kind of stuff. And it's like blaming that issue or really the economy or any issue on Kamala Harris is like saying the Packers lost because of Malik Willis, right? The backup quarterback who didn't take one snap. So, you know, to me, that's a wild thing. Like, it's not fair. It's not real. It's these arguments are not based in reality, but the Trump people did such a good job at making it seem like it is.
Yeah. And I'll say one other issue that they weaponized to great effect was the taxpayer dollars for transgender yes. surgeries for prisoners. And the fact is that that was a Trump administration policy. It started under him, not even under Barack Obama. It started under him. And I believe for the entirety of the Biden presidency, I believe there were only two of those surgeries. But as someone who, like I said, up until very recently worked exclusively in Republican politics, that issue, I mean, they find an issue almost every generation. During the Reagan years, it was welfare queens.
Yeah.
During the Bush years, it was gay marriage.
Yeah.
And now this is the latest iteration of finding that wedge issue that makes it a values statement as opposed to the actual facts.
Right.
And that was something that definitely among Black and Latino men was deadly in terms of depressing her numbers among them. And it's just something that she, and I would say not just her personally, but I'd say definitely the Democrat Party as a whole has to figure out how to approach yeah. those issues in a way that is sensitive to the realities of individuals going through that part. I mean, a very delicate situation in their life,
yeah.
but saying to the culture as a whole, we understand you have misgivings about it too. And not just rejecting those misgivings as bigotry, but also at the same time, making sure that that's communicated clearly. And that's something that the Democrats and the Harris campaign in particular, I don't believe that they saw how damaging it was until it was too late.
Right. And it's what's so frustrating and sad is how that issue, which is a non-issue, you know, that was, like you said, that was the poster child of what was going on. We're going to continue this discussion here with my dear friend Carlton Huffman here on The Rational Revolution. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Such a good song. Oh, you're back here with The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We got my dear friend Carlton Huffman here. And we're talking about, obviously, the election, kind of the fallout. And, you know, I was having a conversation with one of my coworkers earlier today, actually. And we were talking about, you know, these wedge issues, these non-issues. And he brought up, yeah, I tell you what, you know, these schools are forcing our children to, you know, with these transsexual issues and gay issues and da, 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 and they're forcing. And I said, you know what, where are you hearing that? And he goes, that's just, I said, yeah, it cause he's like, that makes me furious. And I said, you know, if there was a school that was forcing that on my children, I would be furious too. I would hate that because here's the thing, you know, people in this campaign dehumanized trans people like I've never seen before. And I said to him, I said, do you know what it would be like to be that person? And he's like, no. And I said, I don't either. I don't know what it would feel like to feel that I am not in the wrong, in the right, you know, gender. That would suck to feel that way. I'm glad I don't have to feel that way. And, but I completely respect those people's rights to exist and to thrive, even though I don't understand what that's like. And I'm fortunate that I don't have to understand what that's like. I sympathize and I empathize with them because all they want to do is just live their lives. And here they're being kicked around like a political football. I think it's disgusting and it's wrong. And, you know, and for this person to believe that into his deepest convictions, and this is happening in the schools, and this is why I vote, because that's not right. And it's like, it's, you're right. That isn't right. But it's also not happening. So, Carlton Huffman, how do we get to that place where they think that this is rampant?
You have, and I mean, it was described even as far back as the 2004 election that there, we saw the rise of alternative media that started off like with Rush Limbaugh and Fox News, but has metastasized into a whole spider web of organizations and outlets. Steve Bannon's War Room is probably one of the more prominent ones, but they basically are very good at just painting a reality, an alternative reality that these people live in, and that they take it as gospel. And for people to be able to combat that, we have to meet these people where they are in terms of their everyday lives. And when you show that you have concern for their everyday lives and their betterment, that used to be the bread and butter of the Democrat Party.
Right.
Whenever it came to working people, but having compassion is not wrong. But I can sit here and say that the Republican Party and the right have definitely been able to paint the Democrat Party with a caricature as the party of coastal elites and the party of basically the college towns, and where a lot of these issues are discussed in an esoteric way without considering how those issues play in the real world. But Democrats have basically, I mean, they've got a long time to think about this, but I don't tell people that you compromise on treating people with respect and dignity and compassion, because that's something that we should always aspire to do. But in terms of earning the trust of people who are naturally inclined to believe these hot button lies and garbage, you have to basically show them that you care about their everyday lives. You hear them and their concerns about inflation and the cost of living, which is a real issue.
Oh, yeah.
When you meet them there, that's whenever you can begin to establish trust, and they see you as someone who is not trying to basically change the world around them, in the sense that we want basically kids to be trans is the way it's presented.
Right. Right. And so, you know, I guess kind of look at this overall, what do you think happened? How did we get to Donald Trump, 47th president?
So we have to look at it. And I mean, this might hurt some feelings, but we got to say it. Joe Biden was the man for the moment in 2020. He was not the man for the moment in 2024. And the simple fact of the matter is that he presented himself in 2020 as a transitional candidate, basically acknowledging the fact that he was going to be the oldest man ever elected to that office up until Donald Trump this past Tuesday. And his people lived in a bubble, thinking that we beat Trump once, therefore we could beat him again. And so he stayed in way beyond his warranty, and to the fact that it took a debate where the entire country saw what some of us were worried about, but were willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But once it was reality was staring us right in the face, you could just sit there and see that there was no way that he was going to be able to win re-election and govern again for 4 years. And the fact that it took a month of pressure to get him to acknowledge that reality left Democrats sitting behind the eight ball. And this, the other one, I mean, the institutional media as a whole, and when I say that, I mean the New York Times, NBC, ABC, all these folks knew who Donald Trump was. And they saw what he did in the aftermath of the election of 2020. But basically, as soon as he left office and then started running again, they treated it as a normal presidential horse race where this person's up in the polls, this person's down in the polls, this person is going to do this on X, Y, and Z issue, whereas Donald Trump just a week ago joked about members of the media getting shot.
Yeah.
And they treated him with normalcy for the bulk of the 3.5 years that he was not in the presidential race at the center of national attention. And because they normalized him, they are going to reap some tough benefits over these next 4 years, because there's only one candidate who's joked about taking away broadcast license.
Yeah.
And that's Donald Trump. And now he has a pliant judiciary, and what we're looking at is possible united Republican control of Congress and Project 2025, where he has said that he is going to basically rip away civil service protections for federal employees. He is going to put people in place that are going to make the media's lives and all of our lives a lot more difficult for them being there.
Yeah, it's you don't even know where to start, you know, and to assume that this guy is a normal candidate is ridiculous, and it's not something that can be based in reality. You know, he's twice impeached. He stole national secrets. He and on. It's something that we can't take seriously. You know, I don't know really how else to say that. And then it is disappointing where, you know, the media just would go on like this is normal when one candidate gets mad when they get fact checked at a debate and the other one does not. You know, this is not something that we can really look at with all sincerity.
Yeah. And the fact is that because they normalized him, in terms of not saying that this man has trafficked in fascist rhetoric and basically said he wanted his generals to be like Hitler's generals, to basically salute and say, yes, sir. The fact that the media just waited up until the last 2 months of the campaign, really, to start taking him more seriously and focusing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
On what they said he was going to do. Also, the man who dined with Nick Quintet.
Yep. All right, we're gonna continue this here right after the break here with Carlton Huffman.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, hon, if it ain't free.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Mark Becker here with my dear friend Carlton Huffman. We're talking about you know, the election and all the fallout and all this. And I guess now, you know, I think this is going to be, autopsied for generation. I really believe that, because, you know, there's so much to what you were saying about Joe Biden staying around. I mean, the questions started when he was inaugurated. Are you going to do it again? And then he started. You know, you could see kind of the deterioration. He was looking older. He was already old, but. And then it got louder and louder, and then they had that infamous debate, and it's like, you can't do this. And so Kamala Harris had that impossible task of running. I think she did an incredible job. She did everything she possibly could. And I think she would have made a remarkable president. Does she run again?
To be determined on that one. I mean, and this is something I have heard said in a few forums, and this is probably a depressing one. I mean, I try not to traffic in just like dark and just like not fun places, but the Democrat Party will probably not nominate another woman for a good while now.
That's and terrible.
I've had several conversations with, like, dear friends, and, I mean, a lot of the women that in my life, they're hurting in a profound way. Because
and that's justified.
This is twice now. This is twice now that America, whether you liked Hillary Clinton, and she was not my cup of tea, but I can sit here and say whether you agreed with her or not, you had two very qualified women going up against somebody who, a self-admitted sexual assaulter, someone who was adjudicated as a rapist by a New York court. And this is probably one of the things that just sums it up very succinctly. The only thing that voters seem to hate worse than a rapist is a woman. And that's why I mean, does she have the right and ability to run again? Absolutely. Did she run as good a race as anybody could have asked her for under the circumstances? Absolutely. She won the debate. She raised $1 billion. She basically turned the fortunes of the campaign from certain defeat to what looked like it was going to be possible, and still lost.
Yeah.
And that's just something that the Democrat Party is going to just have to deal with. And I just hate to say that for a lot of the girls and women in the country, because they are questioning their role and their place in society right now. Whenever you have Roe versus Wade overturned, and I mean, I'm pro-life, but when you sit here and see these cases of women being denied care who wanted those babies, and they're denied care to the point that they almost bleed to death. And despite all of those facts, Trump still won.
Well, and then the party of no government overreach, get the government out of my life, it you know, has this plan where the government gets access to women's health records. What is more invasive? What is more intrusive? And like, what's wild is like the people don't see that. They don't understand that.
And I would sit there and say it is a through line that runs through just like the right wing in America since the post-World War II period. And that I say that, I mean, there was a tradition that did truly believe in limited government, like almost small L libertarian thought. But then there was another wing, and it was whenever they said states' rights, it was basically saying the federal government needs to let us keep our segregation law or any discriminatory law in place. And so that through line is just continued, and now it is basically they're going to use the federal government to basically go after their enemies and who their supporters think are the people who are the other. And that's a tough one. I mean, we've seen it in other places around the world where other peoples have overcome it. But we have to start thinking like that now. We have to start thinking like Poland. We have to start thinking like Chile under Pinochet, that we are going to, and thinking like the black civil rights folks did in the American South in the 1950s and 60s, that we have a government that is at best ambivalent towards us, if not hostile. And we're going to have to use every nonviolent tool in the toolbox to push back and to hopefully get those freedoms secured and make sure that they cannot be threatened in this way ever again.
It's so disappointing to talk about that stuff and know that we're talking about the United States of America. You know, like, it's just so discouraging.
We've borne a charmed life in this country. Yeah. I mean, and I know so much of the history has been sanitized, and we've only recently been able to come to terms with it. Like the racism persistent. I mean, we live in a country where black voters have only had that franchise uninhibited in a manner for 60 years.
Yeah.
In a 250-year-old country.
My parents were alive. My parents were alive when my wife and I got the right to marry each other.
Yeah. And we're looking at it now where the logic and the legal basis for how those cases were decided is being questioned by people like Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito. And that, like I said, I'm not trying to depress people. We have seen people like Gandhi. We saw people like Martin Luther King use nonviolence to take on, in Gandhi's case, the most powerful country in the world at the time, and win their freedom and their sovereignty. And Martin Luther King was able to use nonviolence to, in 13 years, shift the country further on civil rights than it had since the original landing of slaves at Jamestown in 1619.
Yeah.
It's possible, but we have to really, just remember, America is never, I mean, we are special, but we are not immune to the populist forces that have engulfed other democracies around the world and taking them down dark paths. I think that there's still enough in our DNA that we can turn it around, but it got a lot harder on Tuesday. And we also just assumed certain things about our fellow Americans in terms of their respect for the constitutional rights of everybody, that those assumptions were proved wrong on Tuesday. That does not mean that we call them evil. We do not attack other voters, but we do have to attack injustice.
Yeah.
And that time's coming on January 20th.
Yeah, we're talking with Carlton Huffman here. And at least he only wants to be a dictator on day one. Maybe day two he'll put that away. But like, so what is he? What's next for this? What is he going to do?
This is once again black pill prediction. I believe that the January 6th insurrectionists will have a place of honor at some of the inaugural festivities on day one.
That's sick.
You've also seen too. Just the other day, his chief campaign spokeswoman said the mass deportations are coming. You are going to see people who, regardless of how long they've been in this country, whether they are law-abiding, productive members of society, because of their immigration status, you're going to see at minimum thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people rounded up. And we're going to see this in the United States of America. So like, you look at the stock market, private prison facilities, all their stocks go up dramatically because they figure to cash in on what is going to be probably the largest deportation operation in American history.
That's not okay.
It absolutely is not. And that's just the thing is, Donald Trump told us what he was going to do.
And people were like, yeah.
the country still voted for him anyway. And that's, once again, they can sit there and sanitize that vote by sitting there saying, dissatisfied with the economy, dissatisfied with what the Democrats feel about LGBTQ issues or how we feel about guns. But at the end of the day, you don't just get to vote on those one issues. You get the whole package of who Trump and Trumpism is. And like I said, the majority of the voters on Tuesday voted for that. And We're all going to get to deal with it. But at the same time, I don't want to say despair, but just be ready to take action.
Be ready to take nonviolent protests. What happens politically now? Because the Republican Party is the party of Trump. It's gone. It's
for the rest of our lifetimes.
For the rest of our lifetimes. So does another one come to fruition? You know, the Democratic Party, they have to. And I think the worst thing that they could freaking ever possibly do is go further to the left. That would be just as not. It wouldn't be just as bad. I shouldn't say that because that's not. But I think it would be just as bad politically. You would have not very good results whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean that's the entire reason that the Democrats almost lost the 2020 election and lost this election was because culturally they were branded as the party of the squad and AOC.
They have to be the party of the blue dogs now. They have to be.
Yes. I was listening to commentary earlier today where you have the Bernie bros, Justice Democrats, basically saying, you can't go more to the right. You can't go more to the center.
You have to.
You have to go with us. And that's like, they just do not understand. The Democrat, the rest of the country sees the Democrats as a bunch of Bernie bros and Justice Democrats.
If that were the case, if they had to go further to the left, there would be more people way on the far left than just the squad and Bernie Sanders. And there's not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you had two squad members who lost their primary this last time around.
So right.
The squad is smaller. But at the end of the day, the actions of that wing of the party and the rhetoric is seized upon with glee by Fox News, by talk radio, and those other alternative conservative media outlets. And they use it as a, basically, a sledgehammer to hammer the rest of the Democrat Party as a whole, regardless of where they fall on the spectrum. And that was, unfortunately, what happened to Kamala Harris. She got branded as that to the point where I have people in my hometown literally calling her the Antichrist.
Oh, my God. Which is like, you know, and what's just so funny is, you know, I guarantee you Kamala Harris knows more about that Bible than Donald Trump ever has. I guarantee you she spent more time in a church than he ever has. And then you talk about these right-wing bubble media people talking about how he's the second coming of God. He was appointed by God. All these crazy, whack-ass things. You know, it's just, it's nonsensical.
And it's one thing, I was on a prayer call with Senator Warnock, who also continues to serve as the minister for Martin Luther King Jr.'s home church there in Atlanta. And, I mean, he just sat there and said, as a minister of the gospel, he does not understand how people who claim to believe in Christ vote for people who act nothing like Christ.
Right.
But that is the power of just like idolatry within the church, to where they see politics as the end goal, not Christianity as the end goal.
Right. Jesus would come down, and I know where he would stand politically, and it's not in the party of, you know, the pea grabber in chief. that's you're kidding yourselves if that's what you truly believe.
You look at just how Trump acts and just what he teaches his supporters to act like, basically to be the worst versions of themselves.
Right. And I want to wrap it up here with my friend Carlton. I hope, you know, I think this program, I think these conversations ever since Tuesday become more important. And I want you to be part of these, you know, because people need to understand what we can do to take action to get better. So Carlton, I hope that we can continue these as well, because this is important stuff.
Absolutely, my friend. I mean, tell you, like I tell the rest of your listeners, keep the faith. It's going to be rough, but it has been overcome before, and I believe that we can overcome it here.
Hey, as Joe Biden says, don't keep the faith, spread it. Thank you, Carlton. We'll be back right after the break.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
Well, that was that. Many thanks to dear friend Carlton Huffman for coming and kind of, you know, having a little therapy sesh there. I hope this is a therapy session for you guys, and I think we're going to need a lot of these here as we go. I do want to say a couple thank yous. I want to thank everybody at Civic Media. Amanda's the best producer known to man. Todd the God, who has been wonderful. Without these people doing what they do behind the microphone, none of this would have been possible. We talked to Tammy Baldwin. We've talked to Ahmaud Rivera. We've talked to people up and down the ballot, national figures, local figures, and it's all because of the people that make me sound relatively decent. And so it's so So many thanks to them, to Civic Media, for allowing this to exist. I also want to say congratulations to Ahmad Rivera, to Jamie Wall, who came on the program. I want to say congratulations to Tammy Baldwin. She is a warrior. And then another congratulations to our dear friend, Senator Chris Alfheim. Holy cow. We talked about, she's going to be having a regular segment here on this show where we talk about what's going on in Madison. So that's going to be super exciting. And I'm thrilled and grateful that she's going to spend some time with us. I also, dear friend, Kristen Lyerly, who ran the campaign of her life, and I'm so proud to know who she is. I'm so proud to call her my friend. And I hope she's not done. I really, really hope she's not done. You know, this district is not one that is kind to someone on that side of the aisle. And I hope she gives it another go, because she's one of the good ones. I wanna say something. We kind of talked a little bit about this with Carlton, and this is the second week in a row. I have no notes. So this is all just rolling with it, baby. So often, you know, people will tell you what you can and can't think or believe or anything like that. So for example, many people have said this to me since the election. People have like called me about it. People have texted and messaged and commented on Facebook. People said this to my wife. People came out of their way to, you know, someone that my wife hasn't talked to in almost 20 years and said, hey, you know what? I'm really disappointed that you're taking this opinion and these beliefs and you're letting it control what you think to others. You know, I think she posted, if this is what you believe, that's a red line. I don't want to associate with you. And people are, oh, I'm so disappointed that you would say that. And, you know, here's the thing. We knew who this guy was for 8 years. And I'm proud to be on the right side of history the whole damn time. And we talked about, hey, you know what? This guy who was responsible for the Muslim ban, this guy who said Nazis and like Nazis, you know, are fine people. And then in the six times where he had the opportunity to walk it back, he doubled down on it. That guy who stripped rights away from gay people and women at a rate like not seen in 100 years. That guy who was responsible for dangerous rhetoric towards Asian Americans during COVID. That guy who was impeached twice, convicted to dozens of felonies. When he left, stole national secrets. And oh, by the way, before he left, tried to insurrect and do a coup. That guy that we said, you know, anybody but that guy. When he left office, anybody but that guy. Nikki Haley, anyway, whatever. Just not that guy. Because the things that he's going to do, the things that he stood for, the things that he says and does makes life difficult for a lot of people. Just not that guy. And then he said he's running again. And we said, no, not that guy. Well, then he won the nomination. And so then it got a little bit louder. Not that guy. And now he won the election. And people are a little frustrated. And so, you know, you don't get to tell me what we get to feel. You don't get to tell anybody what they feel. Because my wife, who is like my North Star, if someone is going to threaten her, make her life more difficult, not only because she's a woman, but because she is a person of color. Look, what you did was in the 8 years where we said, not that guy. And on Tuesday, when you pulled the lever for that guy, you said all of that stuff was something that you could overlook. Well, I can't. And I won't. And so if you can see and look past all of the hatred, all of the bigotry, all of the racism, all of, like, you don't get to tell my wife what to feel. You don't get to tell my brother who is gay. You don't get to take that from him. You don't get to tell women what they can and can't do. You don't get to tell people how they should be feeling when the person who is responsible for this hatred and bigotry and racism is now sitting in the Oval Office because you put him there. You don't get to tell people to get over it and get in line. I hope we are at a point one day in the future where we can sit down and have a reasonable discussion about these policies, because that's what I've done all of my time in politics. I've been that guy to sit down at a table with anybody. I'll do that once more, but I don't want to do that right now because there's way too much at stake, and we have to now fight that guy because of you. Guys, don't let people take that from you. Don't let people take that from you. All right? As the vice president says, it is only in the dark where we get to see the stars. We'll see you next week. Freedom, freedom.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.